The Gary Knoll Show, weekdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. We're video streaming also at GaryKnoll.com and ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Today, no guests, because I wanted to set the time I would give a guest aside to play my full UN speech, where I was the keynote speaker on Earth Day last year. And especially as just this week, the New York Times came out with a major story showing that the Sierra Club had received over $26 million from people who want them not to talk about gas hydrofracking. Well, we've seen this repeatedly, but this was a whole room filled with people from the environmental movement, and you'll hear what I had to say with them. So I would like you to have a chance to listen to that. Separately today, I'm going to take on some of the issues that we generally don't have time for, each one done with both commentary from myself or others, and also we're going to give a shout down to Bill Gates today from Dr. Heather Pilatic, co-director of the Pesticide Action Network of North America, because as you know, Bill Gates is a big supporter of genetic engineering, vaccinating people in Africa instead of improving their living conditions, and sponsoring an enormous amount of very toxic, in fact, lethal drugs for persons with AIDS. So we're going to offer a different point of view. My issue of the day will be an anti-Oprah Winfrey moment. The antithesis of all the people who say all you have to do is just think some good thoughts and put the energy out, and boy, will the world will just open up to you. I've never found that to be true, and anyone who knows anything about me, and especially my work with empowering people, is you have to be really honest, and it takes time and discipline to deal with your underlying issues. In the overarching issue, we all master something good. We master how to do our work well, and frequently what we do with other people, we do well. But how often is it because someone was too loving, too nice, too kind, too good, that we ask them to step out of our lives? Or as an employer, that we fire them? No. The reality is that when all is said and done, it's what you didn't work on, your weakest link, the dark side that manifests in some way that is simply unacceptable, and then repeatedly doing it. It doesn't matter how many times you say, well, you're sorry, and then do it again. One gentleman who spent a year working on a protocol I gave him had been 23 years as an active drug addict and alcoholic. He had no friends. No one in his family wanted to speak with him because they'd given him thousands of opportunities to do the right thing. He promised he would. He was very sincere in his apologies. He'd go right back. Well, it's been 5 years. He hasn't had a drink. He hasn't gone back to drugs. But most importantly, he finally acknowledged he is not an addict. Rather, he was a person who made improv. Did I help him? I had him work not on his qualities, but on his limitations, only and exclusively, because it's the weak link that you hide, you disguise, you mask, you don't want anyone to know about, that undoes all the good that you do. And we just have a hard time with that. So I believe walk in the direction of your fear. Face your limitations. That's what will strengthen you. That said, I will give you five lies personal growth gurus love to tell you, from Mike Bundrant. And then I'll ask you to call in and share your points of view. Always, we start with the latest on health and healing. So let's begin. This is about broccoli. Now, I'm a big believer in having broccoli. lots of good ways to eat it, including broccoli sprouts. This is from Natural News. Sulfur in broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables may hold the key to healing genetic diseases. And I'll quote this. Our mothers were right. Broccoli is good for us, but possibly in ways our mothers never knew. Health practitioners and fitness experts around the world have heralded the benefits of broccoli for decades. Scientists have long demonstrated that antioxidant properties of broccoli are very good for us, and many people know that broccoli is rich in different nutrients. Well, brand new clinical studies have just released that shows that broccoli and all cruciferous vegetables, including Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, may be able to manipulate human genes. The secret is sulfur. Sulfur. Sulfur in glucosinolate induces enzyme expression, activates detoxification. Quote, cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, Brussels sprouts have been shown to reduce the risk of several degenerative diseases and conditions. The benefits of a diet rich in these vegetables have been well documented in the medical literature for all different types of illnesses. And it's because of the sulfur. So, glad that they finally found the active ingredients, and that's good. Now, what do I know about sulfur, and why do I suggest you eat a lot of garlic and a lot of onions? How many times have you heard me say a half a raw onion a day, sweet onion, helps keep a stroke away because it thins the blood, it kills bacteria, it kills viruses, it kills strep and staph in your throat. It's really good for you. But more than anything, it works through a redox reactions altering cell environment. And the molecules in sulforaphane work via a process in biochemistry called redox, R-E-D-O-X, reaction. Redox is the nickname for oxidation-reduced reactions. A redox reaction is when two chemical compounds exchange electrons. One molecule gives electrons while the other molecule receives electrons. This is the chemical reaction which occurs when alkaline molecules give negatively charged electrons to acidic molecules in order to neutralize the acid. Hence, the sulforaphane ends up creating a highly alkaline environment. How many times have you heard me say a lot of your pain, a lot of infection and inflammation come from being acidic? Sugar, colas, caffeine are highly acidifying. Hence, taking juices, your green juices, are alkalizing. And it's through this process that happens. So, one more reason to have your broccoli. Now, to those of you who have never had a black currant extract, you should. They're not expensive. Black currants are great, but they only are around about 2 weeks every year in the fall. Otherwise, you can just get the extract. It tastes very similar to elderberry extract. It's a dark black, and it tastes a little bit syrupy. But when you take it down, you are getting enormous benefit. Here's the latest on this. And this is from the New Zealand Institute for Plant and Food Research. Quote, a natural extract derived from black currants may help offset the negative impact of exercise on the body. And what they did, they took a large group of very healthy individuals who were exercising vigorously, and when they gave them the black currant extract, they were able to extend their exercise substantially and increase their recovery. So for bicycle riders, for joggers, runners, power walkers, swimmers, take 2 tablespoons of black currant extract before you do your workout. It'll help you. Also, they can now predict rheumatoid arthritis by how many of the cytokines and chemokines you have in your blood. This is from Science Daily. This was just presented at the annual conference of the European League Against Rheumatism, and it says, upregulation of certain cytokines and chemokines signaling molecules of the immune system can predict the development of rheumatoid arthritis. Now, we just finished a major arthritis study, which will be presented in its entirety, including the audio track of people making their final testimony after 4 weeks. And one of the things we saw, you get a simple blood chemistry done. If you have pro-inflammatory markers, including cytokines in the body, and you can see them on your blood workup, you're far, far, far more likely to have arthritis. But when you start drinking apple juice with some chia powder in it, and you start taking the protocol we have, immediately the cytokines go down. You're turning off inflammation. It's like bringing a fire extinguisher in and just putting out the fire. So they found the biochemical marker, but we put it out and then rebuilt the tissue. So good for them for finally catching up, but they're still a long way off. Purple sweet potatoes. You ever had them? They're really good. I like to wash them there very thoroughly, and then slice them thinly. Then put them in a dehydrator that gets to about 115 degrees overnight. And then in the morning, you can season them with any kind of seasoning you want. And they're like a potato chip, and yet they're raw food, living food, high nutrient density, and the same way you do the dried kale. You can have purple sweet potato chips. Here is the latest, and this is from Science Daily from Kansas State University. It says, purple sweet potatoes increase the amount of anti-cancer components. I'll quote this one sentence. It says that the dominant purple color results in anti-cancer components, and that, including the anthocyanins, those are the pigments. Well, that's also true, by the way, of red apples, purple grapes, red grapes, purple plums. All of those have the same type of anti-cancer properties. And finally here, for those of you who are not aware of it, who may have any form of lung condition, a new study shows that soy and the isoflavones in soy help increase the integrity and health of your lungs. One more, if you know anyone who's using statin drugs to lower their cholesterol, here's a good study. Let me quote this. Red yeast rice, it's all natural, red yeast rice, lowers cholesterol. Quote, American researchers have found red yeast rice to be effective in treating hyperlipidemia, the elevation of potentially damaging lipids in the blood, but who cannot tolerate statin treatment. The herbal supplement was found to be effective in reducing the low-density lipoprotein cholesterol levels in the patients. Well, that's good news, and that was published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. All good. Things we can do, inexpensive, easy to do. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
On this heart of mine, I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds, because you're mine. I walk the line. I find it very, very easy to be true.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. This is one of those reports that there's no balance to it, but I wanted to share it with you. California family ambushed by school officials, TV news crews after they refused to vaccinate their daughter. I'll quote this from Jonathan Benson of Natural News. A Sacramento, California family was recently bombarded by a news crew from KXTV News 10 and several officials from the Nanaimo Unified School District in Sacramento for not vaccinating their daughter. As Kyla was one of several students in her neighborhood who legally refused the vaccines for tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis, whooping cough, which prompted a surprise ambush at her home that is now the subject of a new lawsuit. All right. So when they used their legal rights not to vaccinate, suddenly they were set upon. Now, in New Jersey, guess what? It's coming. Flu vaccine will be mandatory for New Jersey healthcare workers, all healthcare workers. Well, then you're starting with the assumption that the flu vaccine has been proven safe and effective for all healthcare workers. Surely there's a study showing that, many studies. No, there is none. And next week, I will begin a series showing you how that all of science has been perverted completely. We've just finished it. It is a full-hour program. It is an original in-depth investigative report entitled Science for Sale: The Pathologizing of Science in the United States. And it will be a hard-hitting documentary. But in that, I will also provide information in depth about why those of you who are in New Jersey in the public health field should be concerned. Also in New Jersey, there is an urgent stop fluoridation of water call. Jessica Coco sent me this. Quote, the New Jersey Public Water Supply Fluoridation Act passed the Senate Health Committee today with a vote of 7-1. You are aware of the dangers of fluoridation. This is another plot by big corporations and to profit it. Well, you're right. We'll be doing an entire report on fluoridation and making it available to everyone. So, and by the way, we got a letter after asking the people in this audience to write and sign a petition. And we received this and from the people who were sponsoring this. We want to thank them. We don't know for sure, but we're guesstimating a little over 200,000 people in this audience signed it. They had an enormous boost right after the show. They're now over 1 million signatures, so they far surpassed the amount they wanted, 700,000. So we thank all of you for writing in to protest the pipeline from Canada down to the south. And also, Bradley Manning, who's now being prosecuted, and the charges against him have been increased, meaning he would be, if he's found guilty, probably executed, is now being nominated in a major campaign to the Norwegian Nobel Committee to award him the Nobel Peace Prize. And it's entirely possible he could win it. Wouldn't that be interesting? Let's say that he is found guilty. Then one Nobel Prize of Peace Prize winner, Barack Obama, would then have to execute another Nobel Peace Prizer, Bradley Manning. And I'll bet everyone around him would find a rationale for that. Wow, that's something to think about. Next up, you doubt that in Canada, we have a lot of Canadian listeners and viewers, you doubt that all the problem with the invasion of our rights and privacies is just something uniquely American? Think again. From the Montreal Gazette, from Jason Magyar, bill would allow total surveillance of every single Canadian citizen. Quote, police will get much easier access to the web surfing habits and personal information of all Canadians if a new law expected to be introduced in the House of Commons next week passes. Privacy watchdogs caution if the so-called lawful access law is passed, it will give police access to web browsing histories, all sensitive personal information, photographs, letters, emails, everything you've ever written in your past, and would grant greater permission to track your cell phone, and all this would be done without a warrant. So, they've learned that since we haven't protested totalitarian police rule in the United States, maybe they can get away with it in Canada as well. In to another issue now, and then I'm going to ask you to call in on this. Oh, by the way, and once again, bureaucrats are finding since no one's standing up against them, they can do anything. And then here's one thing they did. This is from Sarah Burrows. A preschooler's nutritious homemade lunch was replaced with cafeteria nuggets. State agents inspect snacks and lunches and then forces all preschoolers to purchase cafeteria food instead. So when a mother wanted to send a healthy, nutritious lunch, with her kid to preschool, the state stepped in and the inspector said, "Nope. Instead, you must buy 3 chicken nuggets for lunch." Well, okay. So now they're inspecting your lunch. And they're demanding that you eat their food that you buy. That's all bad. And no one's talking about that. This is a talk back to Bill Gates, the wealthiest man in the world, but not the brightest, nor the most humane. Mr. Gates, you have said that you want the people in the world not to starve to death. We all want that, and that's commendable. However, you keep reciting the idea that it is only through genetic engineering that we can achieve this, and you keep harking back to the Green Revolution. Well, as an individual who fought against the Green Revolution, because for those of us who travel, for those of us who do true forensic investigations, we saw that it was all a fraud. According to Heather Pilatek, the Green Revolution is a story that some people like to tell, but there is no basis in historical fact. And being the wealthiest man in the world, you're certainly capable of getting your facts straight if you choose. Let's just give an example. Take the Green Revolution's origins. Where did it originate? In India? No. In the 1940s, in Mexico. It was not really about feeding the world. Mexico was a food exporter at that time. Rather, the aims included stabilizing the rest of rural populations in our neighbor to the south and making friends with a government that at the time was selling supplies to the World War II Axis powers, including Germany and Japan and Italy, and confiscating oil fields held by Standard Oil, a funding source for the Rockefeller Foundation. Oh, did we forget? The Standard Oil Company was owned by and founded by Rockefeller. But the Rockefeller Foundation was the key architect of the Green Revolution. We can also learn from India, the Green Revolution's next stop after Mexico. India embraced the Green Revolution model of chemical-intense agriculture. Now it is the world's second biggest rice grower with surplus grain in government warehouses. But you never mention that. Yet India has more starving people than sub-Saharan Africa, at more than 200 million people are literally starving to death. That's nearly a quarter of its population. History shows that a narrow focus on increasing crop yield through chemical seed packages reduces neither hunger nor poverty. In addition, Mr. Gates, did you ever talk with anyone who lived in India in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s? Well, if you did, then you would have known that all the people were poor. They had just thrown off the yoke of British colonial rule. And they had small parcels of land, let's say an acre or 5 acres. But there would be hundreds who all had the same, and each one grew something different. So one would have cashew trees, another would have almonds. All of them grew something, and then each day they would have like a gigantic food bazaar. You would have at least 100 different pulses and legumes. They would have different types of spices. And even though the people were poor, they weren't hungry because they bartered, they exchanged. And that was fine with them until the Green Revolution. Because then the Green Revolution came in and confiscated this land and took their thousands of acres, made them into one monocrop to which the people had no access. And now those people had no quality land. And then the chemicals went into their water supply and polluted their water. And that was a major source of poverty. So you could say that the Green Revolution, while it made enormous profit for those who owned the land, the wealthiest in the country, and the people who sold them the seeds and pesticides and tractors, it created far greater poverty in those who were displaced and who could not afford the food. Much like in when I was watching the Beatles in the 1960s, raising consciousness about the hunger in the world, including in Bangladesh. Did you know that Bangladesh had one of the largest exporters of fish from fish farms in the world, yet their own population was starving. So it wasn't a matter of not having enough food or land. It was who owned the land and how did they appropriate the resources, certainly not to their own citizens. So no, we do not agree that the Green Revolution offers any promising model for addressing poverty. Bill Gates is urging that more money be donated to agricultural innovation, including crop genetically modified organisms, because, quote, we, one in seven people will continue living needlessly on the edge of starvation, unquote. Of course, this argument worries all of us, but his prescription doesn't work. We could not agree with Bill Gates more on the first point, that we need to address poverty and hunger. But Mr. Gates, I played on my show twice this week a BBC report where a young girl was eating rats because her mother had no food, and a young boy went 5 days without dinner and was trying to quell his stomach. You would think that with your billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars, enormous potential to raise others, that you could set up a food growing and food distribution center in every community in the United States and get corporate sponsorship. So it wouldn't cost the taxpayer, but at least we wouldn't have 12 million hungry kids in the United States. But that's not profitable. But genetic engineered seeds are. So now we get a better understanding of your real motives. But first, the science. Most of the rest of the world's experts agree that genetically modified foods are not what the world's poor needs to feed themselves. The science simply doesn't bear this claim out. The staff of scientists that I've interviewed, and they are very knowledgeable, including the UN's World Bank's International Assessment of Agricultural Knowledge, Science and Technology for Development, after 4 years, and with the input of over 400 experts and tons of information, have concluded the developing world best bet for feeding itself in the 21st century is chemical-free, non-intensive gardening, meaning farming organically, small-scale, farmer-driven, knowledge-intensive, ecological agriculture is what's going to save the world. Yet that is not profitable, so we understand why you're not interested in it. I'm Gary Nall. Now for our issue of the day. You know my thoughts about people who promise instantaneous bliss, you know, go off to a camp, go, and I know people who do this all the time. I know people that every weekend they're running off to a yoga retreat, meditation retreat, sitting at the feet of some guru, some spiritual leader because they're getting some bliss. All the while they're dysfunctional, selfish, insecure, hostile, toxic nature is just hiding, waiting for the next opportunity to spring forth and therefore undo everything, including trust that would otherwise be gained if they took the time to really focus on a more time-tested and proven way of dealing with your problems. That is, work on them. Here are the lies that we're told. You can have anything you want. It sounds so good, especially after you've been swept away by a motivational message that ignites your passion for becoming all you can be. You can do anything you put your mind to, we're told. There's only one problem. You can't. You cannot do anything you want in life. When it comes down to it, this lie is so blatant that it's downright silly. And yet we believe in it because some charismatic person tells us we can do this, but we can't. And secondly is that we then don't look at what we can do that's realistic. I tell people when they're changing, change one thing at a time. No, I want to change it all. No. What if you don't succeed? Then you're going to stop altogether. If you change one thing, give up sugar this month, give up coffee next month, give up alcohol the next month, then in time, at the end of a year, you've given up 12 bad things and replaced them with 12 good things. That can be sustained. If you give up everything in one day, the first time you're tempted, the first time you fall back on it, you're going to say, ah, I'm too weak, and then you've lost everything. Change requires mastery, and that requires discipline. And if we're nothing, we're a country without discipline. We need discipline, and that's not instantaneous. Next, change is easy. How many times have you heard that? Oh, yeah. I'm not suggesting that change is necessarily difficult in all cases. It just needs to be looked at from a different perspective. For example, I believe that every single thing we change, we have to understand what it is that we're changing from. It's a matter of selection. I'm going to give up A because I want B. All right, why do you want to give up A? Why do you want to change? What do you want to change that is in some way self-limiting or negative? And what do you think you're changing to will be that much better? Look at it honestly and objectively. And that means you have to understand, can I do this? Is it doable? Can I do it alone, or do I need help? Do I have the existing tools, or do I have to go get other tools? And it's okay. Humble yourself if you need tools, you need help. And otherwise, a lot of guys in particular don't do the change that they should. In fact, 80% of the people that come to any workshop I do are women. Why? And younger women. Why? Why not older women? Because too many have given up, and too many men are afraid to acknowledge that they have any weakness, so they kind of hide it. And if it's going to be difficult, they just don't do it. Well, all change is difficult. How about that? Because it all requires us to surrender what we had for something that we have not yet mastered. So we go into the unknown, where there is no certainty. But that's also part of the joy of our journey. So just be realistic. Whatever it is. Next is mastery comes quickly. Yeah, how many of you heard of the we'll go to this guy. He is a grandmaster Reiki healer. Yeah? And he took, 40 or 50 years? No, two weekends. He paid $300. Or he's now a nutrition expert. He's a life coach. He took this super silly, stupid course. Now he can coach you about anything in life. Because of what? We buy our credentials in America today, or access to them, or our knowledge. Trust someone like that and, understand, there's no mastery behind that. Mastery doesn't come quickly. And it's never something you gain with a simple gestalt, a simple awakening. Oh, I had an epiphany. Yeah? And did you rub it around your hemorrhoid? Because they have about the same value. So stuff the epiphany and understand that mastery requires an enormous focus and discipline. No different than callousing your hands to lift weights. You got to callous your brain in order to stop the conditioned mind from constantly intercepting and redirecting your energy. Mastery is what allows you to keep going to the light side, the spiritual side in all choices. Otherwise, you keep repeating bad habits. And next, the mind can be programmed to succeed. Yeah, you mean we're all robots? No one can punch your mental buttons and reformat your brain. There are no magical mental codes that will set you free. You set you free by the choices you make and the mastery to maintain those until you develop a new consciousness and awareness of what works and what doesn't work. And that takes time. And finally, all you need to do is, we all crave certainty, and we're willing to pay clearly and dearly for it. The insurance industry exists because of this, as well as our cultural institutions. We elect a president of the United States because they're certain to be able to get us out of jams, but they never do. They're certain to know knowledge that we don't, and they don't. They surround themselves with economists that don't see calamities and crashes coming. They get people in foreign positions to create policies that cause a rupturing of civil order in other cultures and deprivation that can only lead to chaos, and then are surprised when there's chaos and ask for immediate martial law to put it down. Yeah. So the next time someone is certain, walk away. Those are my thoughts. I like yours. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall. By the way, coming up on one of the next two or three programs, an in-depth analysis of the 12 tipping points. That'll help you. And in studio, we have Elizabeth. We're going to take a break in a second so you can call in and tell us what you'd like to tell us. But Elizabeth, a woman stopped by, unannounced, at her son's house.
Right.
And she knocked on the door, then immediately walked in. She was shocked to see her daughter-in-law lying on the couch, totally naked. Soft music was playing, an aroma of perfume filled the room. "What are you doing?" she asked. "I'm waiting for Mike to come home from work," the daughter-in-law answered. "But you're naked," the mother-in-law explained. "Well, this is my love dress," the daughter explained. "Love dress? What the hell? You're butt naked." "Mike loves me," so much he wants me to wear this love dress. It excites him to no end. Every time he sees me in this love dress, he instantly becomes romantic and ravages me for hours on end. He can't get enough of me. The mother-in-law says, I don't want to hear any more of this, and she leaves. When she got home, she undressed, showered, put on her best perfume, dimmed the lights, put on a romantic CD of Barry White, laid on the couch, waited for her husband to arrive. Finally, the husband came in, walked in, and saw her lying there so provocatively. What are you doing? He asks. This is my love dress, she whispered sensually. Need some ironing, he said. What's for dinner? Back in a moment, please stay with us.
Get rhythm. When you get the blues, come on, get a rhythm. When you get the blues, get a rock and roll feeling in your bones. Put taps on your toes and get gone, get a rhythm. When you get the blues, a little shoeshine boy, he never gets slow down, but he's got the dirtiest job in town. Bending low at the people's feet on a windy corner of a dirty street. Well, I asked him while he shined my shoes how to keep from getting the blues. He grinned as he raised his little head. He popped his shoeshine rag and then he said, get rhythm. When you get the blues, come on, get rhythm.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. I've decided I'm going to put my speech at the UN off until next week because I was just notified that we have a leading environmentalist who was at that speech who's going to be on the show and give us their feedback. We'll play my talk, have the environmentalists talk about what they experienced in that room when I was talking, because I really, really challenged all the environmentalists and their organizations for, not everyone, but the vast majority had accepted money from the polluters and therefore stopped campaigning against the polluters. Anyhow, I'm going to replace it with something else that I had that I couldn't have gotten on today you're going to enjoy, about the Federal Reserve and inflation. But let's say hello to Deb from New Jersey. Hi, Deb. You're on.
Hi, Gary. I'm calling about the fluoride issue that you brought up earlier.
Yes.
I just received email that the final vote on that bill in New Jersey will be on March 15th in both the Senate and the Assembly.
Okay, here's what I'd like for you to do. If you would, please, I'd like for you to go to GaryNall.com. I will ask right now for Jason and for Phil, my webmaster, to put up there so it's easy to find my fluoride fiasco article, which was just updated about a week ago. It has all the science against fluoridation up there. It's definitive.
Yes, Gary. I went to the hearing that they held, the Senate Health Committee hearing, and I testified against the bill. I sent them all an email, and I referenced your white paper.
Okay, but listen.
Again, the Democrats, all except for the chair, they all walked out. They didn't want to hear our testimony.
Of course they don't. But here's what I'd like for you to do. I would like for you to call each one of the papers in New Jersey. Send them, the health editor, a copy of the article. Then to email the article to every member of the legislature, including the governor, in New Jersey. Then I will do a full program and invite the people on the air. And if you can find some people who will debate me, who support the bill, then that will give the audience an opportunity to see the science on their side, which is non-existent, that supports fluoridation of our public water, but the science on our side that is challenging it. So it's up to you and other people in New Jersey to get the article, because if you have the article, then you have something that's science-based that you can be helping with, all right? So please go up there, get that, and get it out into as many people's hands as possible. And then state, why are the Democrats in New Jersey afraid of this information? You know, and then you're going to see behind all this is Alex and the pharmaceutical companies and the pollution companies, because they're the ones making the fluoride.
It's clear that the leaders of the Democratic Party are totally behind this, and they are pushing it through, ignoring the requirement that because of the expense of doing fluoridation, there should be a hearing on the expense, and that has they have
okay,
not.
Okay, but I do this also, please. Send me the names and the districts of everyone who is supporting the fluoridation, which is putting poison in the water of New Jersey, and we will announce their names and their phone numbers of their offices, and ask the people who are residents of New Jersey, and the largest segment of my audience is from New Jersey, to call out, all right? All the best to you. Thanks a lot, Deb, for bringing that to our attention. Now, let's go ahead and say hello, and we're going to take more of your calls. Please call in at 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall, and we have Elizabeth in studio. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello, Gary. Hi. We're looking at the mainstream media today, and there's four areas where you were well ahead of the curve. You've been talking about this for a long time, in one case a very long time. And just to show you, the first New York Post today, they're saying that it's clear, this is from John Crudell, he says that there really weren't 243,000 new jobs created during the first month of the year. There were 2.68 million jobs lost. And that shows more proof that Obama did not create any new jobs. He actually, the figures were,
Let me explain this. Yeah. Because every time I hear Keith Olbermann or Rachel Maddow or anyone on the left or anyone on the right, you know, talk about these job creations, or people on Wall Street, the talking heads, the economists, these are bright people. But they're all lying. They're not stupid. They're fully aware that the fact is that last year there was 2,900,000 jobs lost against this January, which is 2,700,000 jobs lost. The difference between how many were lost last year and how many were lost this year is a adjustable figure, and it's adjusted to about 272,000 or so.
Right.
That is not new jobs. That's simply that there were less jobs lost this year by 272,000 than were lost last year. But there were still 2,700,000 jobs lost this year. So this is a completely fallacious argument. It demeans all of the people out there who are trying to find work and can't, but are being told that the economy is turning around and everything is good. And it's a smack in their face. So shame on, there's no shame on the left or the right, the official shame of the official right or left, because they're all so ideologically constructed in their mindset they can't see the truth. The reality is President Obama did not create 272,000 new jobs.
Yeah.
It's just that is how many less were lost. All right?
Yes. So that's a big thing. And it shows no legitimacy at all on their side. And this is very important. This is the very first report that shows that the Japanese government were officially lying about everything, putting people at risk. I'm going to quote here.
But you know, we said this and we had the evidence. We said it at the time of the disaster, then at the packed house at the Ethical Culture Center with 1,000 people. We brought in Vandana Shivan, Carl Grossman, and Len Wasserman, and all the other people. We actually brought people in, including the Ralph Nader of Japan, who went on the record. But isn't it interesting? The New York Times only cites it today.
Yeah.
Had they been listening to the environmentalists from Japan, including from Fukushima, they could have had this story almost a half year ago.
Right.
We were right. They didn't cover this. Now they're covering it. What do they say?
Right.
Quote them verbatim from today's New York Times.
Yes, it's from Hiroko Tabuchi. It says, in surprisingly frank public testimony on Wednesday, Japan's nuclear safety chief said the country's regulations were fundamentally flawed and laid out a somber picture of a nuclear industry shaped by freewheeling power companies, toothless regulators, and a government more interested in promoting nuclear energy than in safeguarding the health of its citizens. The disaster at the Fukushima Daiichi plant, stricken by an earthquake and a tsunami last March, has led to widespread criticism of nuclear officials for their lax approach to safety, as well as a bungled response that allowed meltdowns to occur at 3 of the plant's 6 reactors.
Okay, so they covered it up, the utilities covered up, we covered up the same thing in the United States at our nuclear plants. That's why we want to close all nuclear plants. That's why we did knock on the devil's door. That's why we're engaged in an anti-nuclear effort right now. Right. Good. And you had one other?
Yes. This you've been discussing for at least a couple of years now about how Europe is going to be going the same way as Greece. Well, in London, the New York Times reports today that in London, the unemployment rate has soared to 22.3%, the highest since data began being collected in 92, and that experts say the majority of those who took the streets in London last summer were young people who were unemployed, out of school, and not participating in job training programme. And it's very, very difficult for the young people in Britain to get jobs. One person's been out of work for 2 years now. So, and Greece is burning right now, isn't it? There's an issue.
Yes, it is. I said Greece would be burning, and it's only the beginning. There'll be absolute complete anarchy in Greece over the next 6 months, because the Greeks cannot be taken down any further in their social standards, because right now, a person in Greece, based upon 22% reduction in their minimum wage, would work a full job and get $15,000 at the end of the year. You can't survive on that in Greece. Plus, they're cutting back every benefit and privatizing. And where does this money go? The money doesn't go to the Greek people. It goes to the banks who got them into trouble to begin with. So the Greek people are fighting back. That will then go to, I predict, that Portugal, Spain, Ireland, Latvia, Lithuania, and Malta will also engage in a pushback against the European Union and the banks in the next 24 months. And I predict that we're going to have social conflict in the United States within the next 24 to 36 months.
Right.
What we see in Greece will be happening in the United States.
Right. Thank you, because that was actually my question I was going to ask you. What do you predict now?
But you see, we don't have people standing up in our media and saying what people in the European Parliament are saying. Here's just one person from the European Parliament telling the truth, and you haven't heard this anywhere in the American media.
You know, on behalf of the EFD, Mr. Farage.
Well, Commissioner, you picked the right man. Puppet Papademos is in place. And as Athens caught fire on Sunday night, he rather took my breath away. He said, "Violence and destruction have no place in a democratic country." What democratic country? He's not even a democratically elected prime minister. He's been appointed by you guys. And Greece isn't run through democracy now. It's run through a troika. Three foreign officials that fly into Athens airport and tell the Greeks what they can and can't do. The violence and destruction that you saw on Sunday is being caused directly because people are having their democratic rights taken from them. What else can they do? And I must say, if I was a Greek citizen, I would have been out there joining those protests on Sunday. I'd be out there trying to bring down this monstrosity that has been put upon those people. And in his efforts, in the puppet's efforts to get the MPs to vote for the bailout package, he warned them that if they didn't do so, there would be a dramatic decline in living standards. Well, as he looked outside the front door, has he seen the fact that 50% of the young people are unemployed already? Has he seen the fact that the economy, far from stalling, has contracted for 5 years in a row and is now accelerating on a downward death spiral, a contraction of 7% per annum? Greece is being driven into the ground. And I think, frankly, when it comes to chaos, you ain't seen nothing yet. These policies are driving Greece towards a revolution. They need to be set free. If they don't get the drachma back, you will be responsible for something truly, truly horrible.
Yeah, and it's going to get a lot worse there. By the way, on Saturday, Connect the Dots at noon, ET Eastern Time, PRN host and Green Health journalist and Huffington blogger Allison Rose Levy will speak with Greg Pallast, the brain investigative journalist and author of the new book Walter's Picnic. They'll discuss Greg's new evidence that all the way from Exxon Valdez incident up through the 2010 Deepwater Horizon explosion and into the present, when fracking contaminates water supplies nationwide, the gas and oil industry's long history of spills and accidents and crisis. It's no accident. Results from a way of doing business that we ignore and tolerate, all uncovered in Vulture Picnic. So it's Connect the Dots this Saturday at noon for Greg Pallast. Now, we're going to take just a moment here, as we do once a week, and I'm the only one on PRN who has to do this, in order to raise a little bit of funds. All the money goes directly to Progressive Radio Networks. No one else has to raise money. And today, our special is, and then I'm going to take some more of your calls, And we see that we have Nancy from Long Island standing by, so we'll say hello to Nancy. And I want to try to get to one more piece that you haven't heard before. It's kind of fun. But here's my special. This is my own invention. It's called Cruciferous Stuff. It's brand new, delicious tasting, because I made it with rich chocolate and rich cocoa. It's vegan. It's a friendly product. It's raw, all natural, 15 vegetables and phytonutrients. It's big. There's no genetically modified organisms in here. Oh, no. What you're getting is you're getting broccoli, collard greens, Brussels sprouts, watercress, kale, mustard seed, apple pectin, turnip powder, arugula, turmeric, horseradish, radish sprouts, daikon radish, and ginger root, all in 5,000 milligrams of cocoa. So this is the most comprehensive, all-inclusive cruciferous product I know of. I created it, and it's delicious. It tastes like chocolate. If I didn't put the chocolate in there, it would be too bitter. It took me a year to figure out the right ingredients, but everything's in here at a high amount, so you're getting the best of the best. So it's cruciferous stuff. The big jar, brand new product, great for people like myself who want to make sure we're getting the best of the best into our body every day, and this sure is. And it's an introductory price, and also you're going to get a book of your choice for free is my gift today. Not only getting cruciferous stuff at a phenomenal price, great savings, but you can either have Mind Power, Living in the Moment, or Natural Pet Care as a gift from me free. So how do you get this? Just call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, or come by our vitamin closet, 83rd and Broadway, 877-627-5065. I believe everybody should be having cruciferous stuff, raw, all-natural, coca, delicious tasting, filled with the cruciferous nutrients, and compare anyone else got any cruciferous stuff out there, and then look at this one, in potency and variety, and you'll see why this is the Rolls Royce of all cruciferous products. Now, a lot of people are concerned about, oh, by the way, and we thank Ron Paul for introducing a Parental Consent Act. Why is that important? Because it prevents the federal funding for psychiatric screening of children. Otherwise, your kid would be forced to take a psychiatric mental health screening, and what do you want to bet? Your kid is going to end up having some mental disorder to which they would be given antipsychotic medication. So he's introduced a bill called the Parental Consent Act of 2011. It's H.R. 2769, which would keep, quote, federal education funds from being used to pay any local educational agency or instrument of government that uses the refusal of a parent or legal guardian to provide consent to mental health screening on the basis of a charge of child abuse, child neglect, medical neglect, or educational neglect. And so that means, in lay language, that right now, if you refuse to give your kid one of these tests, they could say your kid's coming away from you because you're a bad parent. Well, we don't want to see that, and he is standing up for your freedom of choice. So thank you, Ron Paul, for introducing HR, and we should support it, HR 2769, the Parental Consent Act of 2011. The Federal Reserve, always confusing to deal with them, but that's what we have to stop, and we're not doing it. Here's one reason we should.
You're about the inflation.
Yes, I did. From that quantitative easing video you sent me, remember? But aren't the food prices higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't the gas prices higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well, unfortunately, things have gotten a lot worse thanks to the Ben Bernanke's money printing.
I recently saw the Bernanke on the 60 Minutes TV show, and he said the quantitative easing was not printing money.
That's funny, because I have it on good authority that the quantitative easing is the same as printing money.
And who told you that?
The Ben Bernanke himself. He said so during an earlier appearance on that same TV program.
Wow. So he just contradicted himself?
Yes. Economists like to say contradictory things.
Why?
Because when you have a terrible track record of predicting the future, taking both sides is the only way you can be right.
So how exactly does printing money cause inflation?
Money is just like everything else. Its value goes up and down based on supply and demand.
So when the Fed prints money, they increase the supply of money and force down the value?
Right. And as the value of money goes down, you need more of it to buy stuff.
Is that why it costs a lot more to buy food and gas than it did a year ago?
Yes. But when economists look at inflation statistics, they ignore the cost of food and energy.
Why would they ignore the cost of the most basic necessities?
Because they claim food and gas prices are too volatile.
What does that mean?
It means they fluctuate between going up and down.
But haven't food and gas prices been going mostly up for several years?
Obviously. But economists like to ignore the obvious.
Why?
So they can sound smarter than the rest of us.
But what about other people? Why do I always hear Wall Street people and big CEOs defending the Fed's money printing?
Because those people benefit from inflation.
How?
Inflation makes the price of everything go up. So it makes the cost of food and gas go up, but it also makes assets like the stock market go up.
And those people own a lot of stocks?
Yes. The richest people in America have most of their net worth in stocks. Many corporate executives get parts of their salary in stock. And Wall Street profits are completely tied to the stock market.
But don't they also drive cars and eat food?
They do, but the cost of those things is insignificant to their net worth.
And I guess the opposite is true for very poor people.
Right. Poor people don't own any stocks, and they often live paycheck to paycheck, so any increase in the cost of basic necessities will hurt them.
So then inflation is a policy that hurts the poor while it helps certain types of rich people?
Exactly.
It's really hard to believe the Fed would be willing to hurt poor people so long as the stock market goes up.
Don't take my word for it. Listen to what the Ben Bernanke had to say.
For example, since August, when we announced our policy of reinvesting maturing securities and signaled that we were considering more purchases, equity prices have risen significantly.
Did he mention food and gas prices in that speech?
Yes.
So he took responsibility for them?
No. The Bernanke said his money printing has nothing to do with commodity price increases.
Does anyone believe that?
No. Even the Fed's own supporters on Wall Street have been advising their wealthy clients to invest in commodities to benefit from the quantitative easing.
What about inflation statistics other than food and gas? Are those going up?
Somewhat, but they understate the truth.
Why?
Because they use virtual price decreases to offset real price increases.
What is a virtual price decrease?
According to economists, if a fancy smart bun this year costs the same as it did last year but has more features, then it's deflating.
But what about people that can't afford a fancy phone?
Those people are just screwed.
It's hard to believe anyone would think gas and food price increases are not a problem because gadgets are getting cheaper.
But William Dudley, who is the head of the New York Fed, disagrees with you.
I certainly acknowledge that food prices have gone up, but a lot, you know, people also forget that other prices are going down. Today, you could buy an iPad 2 that costs the same price as iPad 1 that's twice as powerful.
Doesn't the William Dudley realize how such a policy will impact poor people?
Before joining the Fed, the William Dudley was a partner at the Goldman Sachs. He probably doesn't know what a poor person is.
So most economists think inflation is not a problem?
Yes. They think inflation is tolerable so long as wages and salaries are not going up.
So they think it's okay for people to have to pay more for necessities as long as they have less income.
Exactly.
That is the dumbest logic I have ever heard.
Dumb logic is at the core of modern economic theory.
So is there a good alternative to modern economic theory?
Yes.
What is it?
It's called common sense.
What's a common sense way of understanding money printing and inflation?
Just realize that you never get something for nothing.
What do you mean?
I mean if there are benefits to money printing, like higher stock prices, then there has to be a cost.
As in higher food and gas prices and struggling poor people?
Yes. Along with international turmoil and punishing people that like to save money.
How does inflation punish savers?
As the value of our currency goes down, so does the buying power of the money you save in the bank.
So the Fed would rather we spend all our money than save it.
Yes. Why do you think we have zero interest rates?
But isn't not having enough savings one of the reasons we got into this mess in the first place?
Yes.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah, it shows you how dumb the Fed is, but we are participating when we continue to allow that organization to operate. Nancy from Long Island, last call. Make it quick, please. We're just about out of time.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to say your show really is the Empowerment Hour, and what you just had on about the Fed and getting something for nothing, that ties right back into your earlier comment on instant enlightenment. Instant enlightenment is a scam. There is no such thing as getting something for nothing. But mass media trains us to expect instant results. So we want an instant fix through drugs. We don't want to look at our problems or work on them. We just want to take a pill or go to a guru. So the real joy to be found is within the process of growth and the opportunity that learning affords us in taking charge of our personal power and being empowered individuals.
Thank you, Nancy. I appreciate your insights. We're out of time. Thank you all very much for listening. I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Stay tuned for Mike Fader, always a fount of wisdom coming right at you.
We got married in a fever, hotter than a pepper sprout. We've been talking about Jackson ever since the fire went out. I'm going to Jackson, I'm gonna mess around. Yeah, I'm going to Jackson. Look out, Jackson.